Welcome to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast, where it's all about solving the challenges of living with allergies so you can be more confident and stay allergy safe. Here's your host. She's an adrenaline pen carrying grown-up allergy kid, Nina Modak.
Hello and welcome to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast. Welcome to all my returning listeners. Welcome to any new listeners. Today, I was going to have a trio on, but unfortunately, a child's sick at the start of the summer holidays. That's horrid. So one mum has had to duck out today. But I welcome Lindsay and Angela, who started the Always Carry Two, and that means Always Carry Two Adrenaline Pens hashtag that you might have seen over Twitter and Facebook. So welcome, Angela and Iris.
Hi.
Hi there.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. The first question I like to ask is, tell me a little bit about your allergy journey so far. Where did it start and where are you now?
Okay. Shall I start?
Yeah.
Basically, my daughter Charlotte was diagnosed with anaphylaxis at the age of, or allergies at the age of 11 when she went into anaphylaxis. So she was quite late developing allergies. Basically, we went on holiday and she had a lick of ice cream and it had a nut topping on it. And before we knew it, she was incredibly ill. And from there, when we got home from the holiday, we referred her to be tested and the GP initially refused. So we went privately and she was tested and diagnosed with all tree nuts and peanut allergies. And since then, she has had a number of reactions and carries, obviously, the adrenaline.
Okay. And then,
well, yeah, for me, Iris, my son Freddie is 8. He was diagnosed at 10 months old. I was feeding him scrambled egg and he only had a very small amount and he reacted. I gave him some antihistamines, took him to the GP. We took him privately then to be referred because the waiting list was just crazy. Mm-hmm. And he was diagnosed with peanut, tree nut and egg allergy. The egg he outgrew age 4. He had a food challenge for peanut age 5 and he went into anaphylaxis. And he then went on to have a biphasic reaction in school 2 days later. His teacher EpiPenned him and she went on to win the Allergy UK Overall Hero Award actually last year.
Oh, wow.
for her great, fast, brave reaction. So that's where we're at. That's our journey. So he's still very much allergic. Mm-hmm. We've been very careful and so far, touch wood, we haven't had any other incidents.
Oh, wow. And then how old are your kids now?
Charlotte is 16.
Okay.
Freddie is 8.
Okay, so you've both, it's been a little while on your journey now. It's not just the beginning.
Yes.
So tell me about what it was like discovering their allergies.
I don't know, really. I mean, obviously, it was a big shock. It was alongside Charlotte was having other health problems at the time. Mm-hmm. I think quite a few things hit her in puberty, unfortunately. She had a lot of bone issues and operations. And at one time, they suspected a cancer in the leg bone. So we were going through quite a stressful time anyway. And this holiday had been sort of a nice break. And then obviously, the allergies hit. And it's just taken a lot of adapting and getting used to, really. I mean, Charlotte takes it all in her stride. She's very mature for her age. Mm-hmm. And basically handles it incredibly well. It's got her friends trained. They know what they're doing with the EpiPen. She was always very vocal, standing up for herself. But I think what I found was I grieved a life I thought she wouldn't have anymore. Mm-hmm. Always having to read labels, always being restricted where she could eat. It was going to change the course of her life. Mm-hmm. But she's learned very quickly, as I think all allergy children do, certainly when they get to an older age, to adapt, find ways of eating out, having fun, being with her friends still. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of what I've done campaigning wise is my way of trying to get something positive out of what I thought was a very negative thing to happen, you know.
So that's
really where I am.
No, absolutely. I think for me, when we found out, it was a little bit of a shock because we thought, well, we don't have allergies in the family. Where did that one come from? But we were okay. It was very easy to manage. I felt lucky because we did have pens. So I think once we had the pens and he was only one, we could manage all that. It changes. So preschool, that was a little bit of a hard one to hand over your child and to give you a trust. But we were incredibly lucky. We've got an amazing preschool in our village and they were great ladies. I think for me, the big change where it really hit home was when he had his anaphylactic reaction. I think it's a game changer.
Yeah.
And I think up until then, we did give him May contains. We were very sensible when we ate out and did all the usual precautions. Mm-hmm. But once he had an anaphylaxis, then that was it. I was on board. I did so much research, so much homework. We ruled out May contains. We don't have nuts in our home. Once you see your child like that, and I saw him like that twice in as many days, it is life changing. And I think we suffered a little bit of trauma and anxiety after that. But now I would say at age 8, almost 9, he's pretty okay with it. He'll question you within an inch of your life when it comes to food.
Brilliant.
He will not take food from anybody without double, triple checking labels. Doesn't stop him from doing parties, camps, sleepovers. You know, it is what it is. It's part of who he is. It doesn't define who he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really great to hear that your kids are so, they've taken such ownership over it. And so,
yeah.
And it, not like, and as some, well, for you, Iris, was it Iris, yeah. You and your daughter or...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, son. It's
son. Okay, the other way around.
Yeah.
The Skype pictures are the other way around. Yeah, so, this is really great to hear because obviously... And then how are you going to kind of start teaching your son about when he starts entering teenage years? Because I know I've talked to a lot of mums who have teenage sons who are kind of embarrassed or they don't know quite...
Yeah.
You know, how to deal with it. Have you started thinking about that yet?
Well, we have. I think for me, my personal aim is in September, Freddie goes into year 4. By the time he leaves primary school, year 6, he will be carrying his own pens. At the moment, school don't want him carrying them. He carries them himself when we go out. Mm-hmm. So I don't like to have them in my bag. I like him to have that responsibility.
Yeah.
The teen years do worry me because that is an age group that, you know, we all know what that's like. We think we're invincible and that is a concern. We want to look cool and fit in. But Freddie went through a very bad stage at the age of 5 after his 2 anaphylactic reactions. He suffered anxiety, panic attacks. Mm-hmm. It was pretty traumatic. I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. It was a game changer for us as a family, but it made me more determined that this didn't control us, we controlled it. Mm-hmm. And that's very much now how we live our lives. We holiday abroad, we go to theatres, we go to the cinema, we go out. And the more we do these things and the more relaxed we become, whilst always remaining cautious and vigilant, the more Freddie realises, okay, it's one part of who I am. Mm-hmm. And I think because he had those reactions, he is a little bit, it's never left him completely.
Yeah.
So I hope he'll have an element, just enough of a healthy element of fear that he'll always carry his pens. But that's where I look to Angela for guidance because she's already at that teen stage.
Yeah.
She helps a lot.
Yeah. We've just hit the first boyfriend stage, so we're getting we're getting really into the teen.
Okay.
Yeah, that worries me. I think the dating game.
Yeah,
it's fine. As someone who has a boyfriend, we've been together for 5 years and like gone through all of that.
Oh,
it's fine.
Oh.
Excellent. Good too.
Angela, how did you start? I mean, you obviously a reaction came much later in your daughter's life, so that's, I mean, shocking in the first, and it hits just before, you know, as she's starting secondary school. And
that's right.
And about to hit teenage years. So how did you kind of handle that? How did you approach that?
Well, we basically went into the school because obviously she'd been accepted in secondary school. This happened just before she was going. Mm-hmm. So we went to see the head teacher. We actually had an appointment with him and discussed her allergies. Obviously, she's not the first child going into the school with allergies.
Yeah.
But obviously, it's a different ball game completely because they don't make the schools nut free like they might do the primary schools. Everyone around her would be eating nuts, but the way we approached it was, this is the real world, this is life. There will always be nuts everywhere. you have to learn to deal with it. I think the main issue and what parents have to consider is that when you go into the school, there is still a duty of care, so they can't, for example, do a science lesson with nuts, which apparently they do, and expect her to sit in that classroom classroom, so they shouldn't actually be doing that, you know, while she's in the class. We had an issue with them trying to discourage us from taking food tech GCSE. Now, my daughter wanted to do that, and I sort of started talking about inclusion and how the child needs to be able to basically do the lesson the same as any other child, and she's actually on par to get an A in her, hopefully, in her GCSE. On her mocks she came in with an A, and the teacher was like, I'm so glad that we listened to you. Basically they gave her own utensils, that kind of thing, so and gave her own area to work, and just basically asked the parents not to let their children cook with nuts. She did say it might change at GCSE when they're doing their coursework, and I believe somebody did work with hazelnut on one time, but they did it separately and obviously cleaned the kitchen down. So, you know, it's just a matter of working with us when you get to secondary school, and for Charlotte to be able to know to walk away if she needed to, you know, from somebody at lunch eating a peanut butter sandwich, you know. And at Christmas times we provided the teachers with a list of safe treats, so that hopefully they wouldn't be handing out, you know, the nutty chocolates in the classroom. So yeah, that was it really. We didn't. I mean, we've got through. Obviously, she's going into sixth form now. So we've successfully managed it. Which is good.
Well, it sounds incredibly practical, which is great because both of you have had somewhat traumatic experiences to begin with, but now you're coming out of it and, you know, saying, well, this is what we've got. This is what we've got to deal with. But here's how we're going to make it just one part and not let it stop our children or us.
I think you have to. I think if you give in to the anxiety, if you give in, you're going to really limit your life and your child's life. And I don't think we'd be doing them any favours whatsoever. So the only way to come out on top of this is to take control of it in all aspects of it, really. And just being sensible, taking your precautions, but really just owning it and taking control and not surrendering to those feelings.
Yeah,
I think personally, I know Iris would probably say the same. What's helped immeasurably is to have these support groups on Facebook. I mean, we have two or three very big nut allergy forums on Facebook where we are talking to the same people, the same issues, the same problems day after day after day. Any time of the day we've got a question or a worry, you've got somebody there going through the same thing. And these groups have been an absolute godsend from the day we found out, to the fact that I now run two or three of my own. And then obviously from there we now have a campaign as well, because it's so important for us, isn't it?
I think the groups have been real they've been an absolute blessing. And I think then you're also then looking at families who are dealing with multiple allergies, and that's really, really eye-opening. I take my hats off to these parents. That really does kind of give you another level of looking at things as well and putting it into perspective. So yeah, the groups are a godsend.
And Iris, I just wanted to, I know you mentioned earlier when your son was, when you discovered your son's allergy and those, that quite really stressful time for him having those two reactions. Can you talk about firstly how you helped your son get over his anxiety, because he must have, you know, food aversion, you know, just not wanting, just feeling very unsafe all the time. Can you talk about the strategy you
used? Yeah, absolutely. It started with the food challenge, the peanut challenge, and our consultant is an incredible guy. He really just goes over and above and beyond for us, but he wasn't in that day, and the doctor on duty had very little knowledge of anaphylaxis. So when he did have an anaphylactic reaction, she didn't treat him with the EpiPen. Hence, he had the biphasic reaction in school 2 days later. And I think that's where my personal trauma came from, was then the trust. You know, where do you go from there? Who do you trust? And then it happening in school, when he went back to school in September, that's when it really hit Freddie and I. So it was just actually, I sought some advice. I went and I had some private therapy. And just realizing that I could tell Freddie what anxiety was. I could explain what the fight and flight reaction in your body is. And once he realized that, because when you're having a panic attack, it's actually kind of similar to feeling of anaphylaxis. So every time he was having an anxiety or a panic attack, he thought, this is it, I'm going to die. So once I sat down and I explained that to him, and we did many little things. We had little stones and we had a little jar. So when you had a fear, you took the stone. What was your fear? We talked about it. We owned it. Did that happened the last time. How did we manage it? Okay, put your stone in the jar. That was his fear gone. Or if it wasn't gone, then I would look after that fear for the day and I would hold it for him and I would deal with it. And we would talk about it when he got in from school. A good friend of mine is a yoga teacher. He did mindfulness for her. He still does weekly yoga with her because he's a really keen footballer, so that helps him. And little things like that, actually, and just allowing, especially boys, for them to talk about their feelings, yeah. So it's actually okay. You can talk about these things, and fear and anxiety and panic are all a very real part of life. We all experience it, and being honest and never making promises. I can't make promises, you know, I can't guarantee him anything. And I think when you make those promises, then I think you're setting yourself and the family up for a bit of a failure. So really, that was how we did it. We've done a lot. We did hypnotherapy. We did a lot with him. We did a lot. His school were great as well.
But I think the one thing that makes it different is, yes, you allowed him to talk about his feelings and tell him it's okay, but you also, it wasn't just let's talk about our feelings and leave it there. It's let's talk about our feelings and find a solution to get through it.
Absolutely. It really was. And it was, I mean, I would say it took over a year to really kind of turn a corner. Mm-hmm. School were incredible. He knew who his safe people were that he could really trust and go to. Obviously, he had his favourites. And it was just, you know, eating out in a restaurant. You know, if you don't want to eat, you want to just sit with us as a family, then that's fine. But this is what we do. We have to go out. You know, we do these things. It wasn't pushing him. If he really didn't want to go somewhere, then I would go off and let my husband and my other son go and eat. Mm-hmm. And then Freddie and I would go for a walk. But it was gently coaxing, just slowly, step by step, never forcing him to do anything, just been led by him as well, really. And I'm really, really pleased to say he's quite a mature chap for eight. He's really kind of, I think, heads and shoulders above his peers in more ways than one. It just, when it comes to the emotional side of things, like he's got a lot of empathy and he's got a lot of understanding, you know, which is really good. And he's got some great little buddies who at age eight, what they can't tell you about allergies isn't worth knowing. It's astounding, really. So they've got great parents who clearly support us and you know, they know how to use EpiPens. I've been in school assemblies and the kids have, you know, asked great questions, put their hands up for great answers, and I've just thought, wow, this is incredible. This next generation really are a knowledgeable little bunch. So he's a lucky kid. He's got some great people around him.
Yeah. And then how did you start, because you said you were diagnosed with post-traumatic stress. So how
I was
how did you kind of manage that and get over it? Because it's
therapy. A really, really good counselor and a couple of really, really good friends. It changes. I didn't realize this is what I had. I was just a very angry person, and I was, you know, I wanted changes, little things in school and little things with PTA and cake sales, and you constantly feel like you're battling, whether it's in a restaurant or wherever. And then I lost a couple of friendships, which was devastating to me. It absolutely broke my heart. And I know now, looking back, you know, I wasn't somebody great to be around at the time. I was so angry and I was tearful and I was really falling apart. So then I went and I had the counselling, and bit by bit, this incredible lady really helped build me back up. My husband was just amazing. He was just amazing. The boys were both incredible as well. My own family were amazing. And a couple of really close girlfriends really just were my sounding boards. And, you know, once you kind of start openly talking about it and you own it, I think that's the key thing. I was a bit ashamed at first. I was really mortified that I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder and I had anxiety. It felt shameful. And I think once you actually own that and you say, it's okay, it's a part of me, I've come through it, I've survived it, then that's your turning point. You've got to just admit it. You have to own it.
Yeah, that's fantastic advice. Then thank you for talking about it, because it's one of the things that it's not really talked about so much, because I know when I was talking with my parents about my allergy and I had an allergic reaction at 16, it wasn't until we talked about it on the podcast that my mum was getting angry about it, and my parents, like my dad as well, and they were like, and I was asking, well, how do you deal with it? And my mum was like, well, I don't think I have dealt with it, because it's almost 10 years later. This Christmas it'll be 10 years past, even though we talked about it and it was nine years after the fact. But it's one of those things, you always get on with life, because allergies are, it's so normal.
They're so normal, and they're also, it's kind of, it's a double thing. They're so normal, but yet they're not treated so seriously mm-hmm. at the same time. And I think that's a lot of where the anxiety comes from, because you feel like you're being a helicopter mom and you're being mm-hmm. overprotective, and you're certainly being perceived that way. And I know I was being perceived that way, hence, you know, some friendships mm-hmm. altered and changed. And that's where some of the frustration and the anxiety and the anger comes from. You don't want to make demands. You don't want to be, you know, a helicopter parent or crazy, but you just want to be heard and understood. And I think mm-hmm. once that happens, hence when Angela started the campaign, I was so keen to kind of come on board and join her. Mm-hmm. Because I think what Angela has done really over the last few years within our community and on the Facebook groups is huge. She's changed. Sorry, Angela, if I'm embarrassing you, but she has changed. She has changed a lot of people's lives. I think she's opened a lot of doors. She's given us all a voice and a forum. And I think the campaign is huge. It saddens me that I think the campaign is seen as a them versus us. And it's not. I have, you know, these allergists are incredible men and women. They are incredible for what they do for us and our community. We all live in hope one day that they can find the key that will unlock mm-hmm. it all. And it's just, but we disagree that you can't really risk assess anaphylaxis. We know that as parents. Mm-hmm. And when Angela started this off and started a petition off, you know, it's huge. It's mm-hmm. such a talking point on the forums. It's huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's talk about the campaign. Angela, do you want to tell me about what it is and how you started it?
Yeah, so basically it started, well, way back in March 2005. I had to go back in my records to see when it was. It was so long ago. And basically what happened was, as a member of these forums that I was talking to you about, I kept seeing reports of parents basically going to collect their prescriptions as prescribed by their allergist consultants, to find that rather than the 4 or 2 pens they were carrying, they had been told they could have one. And stories like this kept popping up over and over again. And I thought, well, what's going on here? And there were various excuses from the doctors as to why these parents could only have the one pen mm-hmm. for their child. So basically we started looking into it a bit further, and I was gathering stories together. And in the end I said, look, this is ridiculous. We'll find out where this is coming from. I spoke to both the Legion charities to get some advice, see if they knew what was going on. Initially they didn't seem to have much information. So I wrote to the MHRA, who disclosed to me that the BSACI, so I'm going to have to remember what that stands
British
for now,
British Society.
Sorry,
I can't remember.
Anyway, we just call them the BSACI. So basically, they were recommending that they were looking. They were trying to get the MHRA to change their recommendations of 2, because they always say carry 2, to 1. So this is where it stood. There was no actual guidelines pushed through at that time. So I started the petition. I think it got up to about 9,000. And basically, we were just asking them to reverse the recommendations, or to basically look at what we perceived as the main issues that would come from that. And obviously, people wrote their own stories and comments on the petition. And it all came to a standstill. We didn't hear anything until October last year. An Iris contacted me and said, basically, the BSACI's guidelines have come out recommending 1 for the majority of patients. So at that point, obviously, we revisited the petition, addressed all the points again, looked at their guidelines, came up with our own campaign group as well. Initially, it was hashtag carry 2. We changed it to hashtag always carry 2, purely for the grounds that if you search hashtag carry 2, it came up with lots of pictures of guns on the internet. We don't want to be associated with them.
No.
So we changed it to hashtag always carry 2. And from there, it's just grown. I mean, the petition's on 48,355, I think, now.
Oh, wow.
And we've come to a little bit of a standstill now, so we need to push this again summer.
Yeah, well, hopefully this podcast will help. Yeah. So everyone listening, make sure the link's going to be on the show notes and go sign it.
That will be amazing.
Fantastic.
I mean, basically, our concerns with the guidelines are... well, I mean, where do we start? They say that the majority of people only require one pen during anaphylaxis, is what they are initially saying.
Yeah.
And how we initially read it, But the point is, they're relying on the second pen to come from the ambulances, for example, from the paramedic, if the second pen is required. Now, we straight away said, what if a pen misfires? What if the ambulances are delayed? We've got reports of up to 45 minutes on our petition waiting for an ambulance. You're going to potentially need that second pen. My child in a stressful situation could easily misfire that one pen. And then what does she do if she hasn't got that second pen as backup? So I think what it is, it's everyday realities for us. We're trying to get the practical side, they're looking at the science side, so we're clashing basically. And so what we've done is we've created a sort of photo campaign on, I don't know if you've seen it on the we've also got Instagram and Twitter pages now, but basically we created hashtag where do you carry to, and it's pictures of people carrying their AAIs in normal everyday situations, you know. And another point, I know obviously both myself and Iris and Lindsay have done a lot of campaigning on, is the rural issue, because they say that a patient may require a second pen if they're in a rural situation where obviously the ambulance may not arrive in time. And they're saying that people who live in those areas require that second pen. Well, doesn't everyone have the right to travel?
If my
child wanted to go in the middle of the sticks tomorrow somewhere, she should be allowed to have that second pen. It's like it's restricting people from travel or from going where they want to go if they're only allowed one pen, unless they actually lived in that area. You're not going to go to your GP and say, quick, give me another pen. I'm going to the country tomorrow. So it's not going to happen. It's not practical. And I think this is our biggest issue. Is we live our lives daily. We know so many people that needed a second pen, you know. I just don't understand the logic. I can see, it's like my husband always says, you know, they risk assess everything. Everything's about risk assessment. But they say that a patient will be risk assessed before they're issued the 2, 1, or 0 pens. Now, I know from experience, my own daughter last year, we went to get her adrenaline pens prescribed again. And he tried to give me one. And he said basically they were expensive. He said that she hadn't used it the year before. And I was like, well, that's ridiculous, because you don't stop using a seatbelt because you haven't been in a car crash the year before. You know, you carry on with your safety net, don't you? You need those pens. And he wasn't risk assessed. That was his risk assessment. That was all he had to say on the matter. And I was like, well, hold on a minute. And 20 minutes later, we had the pens. And basically, I don't think he knew what hit him, but I had all the facts, the information, you know. But it still makes me very nervous. Charlotte's prescription's due again in September. I'm going to have the same argument, I know. And I don't think the risk assessments are generally being carried out. And if they are, the GPs aren't knowledgeable enough. It should be with a consultant. Well, yes. The anaphylaxis campaign will tell you that the GPs need more training. Allergy UK will tell you GP needs more training. So why have they brought out guidelines before they've trained the GPs?
But I think that's the problem, isn't it? It's not being risk assessed. And that, in theory, the guidelines get it. Great. But that's in theory. The reality is GPs are not okay. And we look at my son, for example, 5 years old, having a food challenge in a hospital on a ward that does food challenges. He went into an anaphylactic reaction. The doctor on duty, not our consultant, who is amazing, and when we had a lot of meetings afterwards, admitted she had little knowledge of anaphylaxis. She didn't EpiPen him. So this is from a doctor in a food challenge situation. So, and I know we've seen so many stories, there's so many campaign comments on the petition, people, you know, the situations that they've been in. There is no risk assessment. You're in and out in a 10-minute GP appointment. I'm happy for Freddie not to carry pens if you let me do a food challenge. Take me in, we'll do a food challenge. He passes, he doesn't need pens. Well, that's great. That's the risk assessment. Either pens or a food challenge. There's no grey area when it comes to anaphylaxis. By its very nature, it cannot be predicted. It's really hard to risk assess it. Your food challenge or your prescribed pens. That's just the way forward.
Definitely.
Sounds very sensible and fair to me.
Absolutely.
We live in hope they'll listen. But we continually ask the question about the 999 delays. We know that's a big issue for all 999 calls at the moment. You know, there are not enough ambulances. The hospitals are, you know, they're too full. They can't. The ambulances are being stretched to the limit. Their response times, for example, for Code Red where we live, is over 12 minutes. So in theory, and we're 1 mile from the ambulance station. So in theory, we're going to need that second pen if she was at home when she had the reaction, you know.
Yeah, it'd be faster for you to get her in the car and take her to the hospital.
I've actually said that. I've actually said that if it was at home, we would drive. I mean, the fact is we've got the two pens anyway, but we would drive, definitely, because I wouldn't take that risk. But we have asked Allergy UK, actually, they have been very good, and they've addressed a lot of questions to the BSACI on our behalf, as well as in their own, you know, in their own way, to actually, and that was one of the main questions that they asked them, which they haven't responded to, is how will you deal with 999 delays then? How can you say a patient only needs one if that ambulance isn't going to arrive for the second, you know? And they've yet to answer, you know. I think they think they're just going to go away.
Well, I think I think it's really hard to get an answer from them, because at the moment our campaign Twitter page and our personal Twitter accounts we're being blocked left, right and centre. If we even politely, we've had, so Allergy Hour, which is, correct me if I'm wrong here, Angela, it's every Thursday, and the lady who runs it was in a forum that this particular night the topic was going to be about the BSACI guidelines. So I asked one question. It was about the rural point, and I asked about four times, and I was being completely ignored. I was just like, hey, I'm still here, really would love to know, you know, how do we work around this, you know, how does that guideline work? Ignored. Finally Dr. Till answered me, just saying I can't answer personal questions. I thought, well, okay, it's not actually a personal issue here. I just said, okay, thank you, would you be free to talk at another time? Next thing I know, I'm blocked, and I've been blocked, as has Angela, as has Lindsay. So we can't even have a discussion about the 48,000 plus people who are following the campaign, who support the campaign, who are having issues with themselves or with their children or whatever member of their family. So it's not open to discussion. Which is a real shame. Yeah, it's a shame,
and
it's become about them and us. Yeah, in particular, one chap, and I don't want to go into any huge personal details. We've had one particular chap who I really do feel is trying to discredit us. We're trying to make us look like these three irrational head cases as mothers that we're helicoptering and we're being dramatic and we're being scary. Actually, I think the campaign is really amazing. We're getting more and more teenagers stepping forward with pictures of their pens, the everyday situation, the pictures of it. It really shows allergies don't define you. We've got pictures of whether it's traveling, in theatre, bike riding, whatever it may be. There's loads. And I think the campaign is a really positive message. Allergies don't define you. Get out there and live your life. Just take your two pens with you.
I think that's the main point. Sorry to interrupt. I think basically whatever the outcome is of us campaigning against the guidelines, and obviously we all hope for the best and that they will reverse this guideline. But in the meantime, and we will continue even to the point where the if we do get the guidelines changed, is to educate, because that's what these photos, that's what our posts, that's what our tweets are doing. I've had over 30 people contact me privately, say thank you very much, we now have a second AAI. Iris herself, Lindsay as well, the campaign, we've all had it, because people are saying, we've seen your campaign, we didn't even realize we were potentially entitled to the second pen. They've then taken the MHRA guidelines that we've given them, which says that everyone should carry two pens. We also give them quotes from the European Medicines Agency, you know, we tell them to speak to Allergy UK if necessary, if they need to, and they've gone back and they've got their pen. So brilliant. You know, if it's going to maybe save a life, it's worth doing, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Well, I remember when I used to have one all the way through school, and then it was when I was in secondary school, I think my mum went and got my prescription and I was prescribed two, and there was, I think it was, that was when the new guidelines were carry two because of potential biphasic reaction, or the fact that you could have either the first one wouldn't work. So
well, that's it. Yeah. I mean, misfire rates, it'd be interesting to see how many there are. We sort of try and gather information where and when we can. Obviously, all information to do with anaphylaxis and allergies is quite hard to get, because obviously there is the link with asthma as well. So if a child's having a reaction and it's asthma's involved, then it may go be recorded as an asthma case as opposed to a food allergy case. So I think that it's quite hard sometimes to gain this information, but certainly from we've read about misfire rates, misfire cases, and you know, or people injecting the pen in the thumb, the first pen, or the first pen not being enough, and they've needed a second or even a third pen. So I don't think that's what we've always said. Or how do you risk assess anaphylaxis? I mean, we follow the European conferences on Twitter, and they've had top allergists saying you can't risk assess. There are too many factors involved. It's impossible to know what reaction you're going to have. You can't say you're going to live your life with mild reactions. You know, we know so many people have gone mild all their life to suddenly having a severe one. Some of the deaths that you've read about have been children or teenagers who have had mild reactions all through their childhood, you know. So unfortunately it is a big worry. When is that second one going to be, and are you going to be prepared for it? Are you prepared for the biphasic reaction? If that hits you, then, you know, as Iris knows, you know, it can be days later.
I mean, it kind of also highlights that we people with allergies need to be incredibly familiar with how to use the EpiPens.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's key. And that's something I do agree. The allergists are saying a lot of people don't actually know how to use them, which is, but I would say as a parent, actually, you're very much left. You get a video, you get a little demo, and then off you pop. That's it. There is no backup. There's no support. There's no emotional support whatsoever. Allergies and anxiety go hand in hand. You don't have one without the other. No matter how fantastic a parent you are, no matter how calm, cool and collected you are, the fact remains when you're living your life reading labels constantly, you get party invitations, your first thought isn't, yay, it's, oh Lord, what food will they be doing? Oh, no, I have to be that mum that kind of says, you know, bothers the party mum and like, do you mind if I ask? You know, so you're constantly waving, bobbing in and out of things. You're constantly got something going on. Most days are really good, to be honest. And most days it's normal and you crack on with it. But every now and again, you just have a day where it hits you, so it's constantly lurking in the background, a bit like the boogeyman, just waiting to rear it, you know, just waiting to rear its head a little bit. And there is no support with that. So there's your video, there's your little demo, off you pop, crack on and live your life. It doesn't work that way. There has to be more support for parents, for patients. There has to be more awareness, which again I think is what the campaign does with the pictures. We talk about pens, carrying them, picturing them. We do everything, you know, and I think that's really key. We've had so many messages from people looking for advice. We can't give medical advice. We're not medically trained. We refer them onto Allergy UK time and time again because we do think Allergy UK is fantastic for dealing and responding with people fairly quickly. But you know, we give emotional support. We definitely give a lot of emotional support. We're just three mums. This is our own personal time. I can be sitting on my phone at midnight messaging, answering somebody who's just reaching out and just needs somebody to say, it's okay. Exactly. Take a deep breath. It's okay. We've been there. You're not going crazy. You're not on your own. We know what this fear is, and it's real, and it's okay.
Yeah,
definitely. I think in that sense, we've got a lot to offer because we are just other mums as well. You know, we're not a big charity or an agency that, you know, that they feel might be a bit more formal. I think they think, you know, well, they can just chat to us and, you know, and whatever we're doing, if it's out of our depth, we'll straight away refer them. You know, I've got no issue with working with the charity. So I think to start with, they might have had an issue working with us. But it's come to the point now where, you know, in our own right, if there's 48,000 people following every update that I do on the petition, and for every post that Iris or Lindsay puts on the Facebook page or Instagram or Twitter, anything we say, there's going to be a lot of people reading that. So so it's great if we can work with the right people to get the right information out there, because you know, we're not going anywhere. The petition's not going anywhere. So
allergies aren't going anywhere. They're just getting more and more.
No, of course
on the increase, isn't it?
I mean
I just think this can only be positive. It has to be. And for every little knock we get and every little setback, we think, well, we'll just keep going because it's too important not to. And I wouldn't sleep easy at night if I didn't speak up for what I believed in. So you know, this is why we run the forums as well. You know, I run a food guide forum so people can share safe treats and finds, and we've got about 1700 members on that now. And so basically we just share the safe treats, obviously with a statement for the company, obviously advising people to recheck on the label when they buy. But basically it's just a quick way, especially at Christmas and Easter when everything's so nutty, you know.
Quite literally.
Let's just have a look at my page and find something safe on there, you know. So that's all it is. is. It's not a big deal, but I know it helps me, and it certainly helps.
Oh, it's a tremendous help, I think, especially like you say, Easter, Christmas time. Mm-hmm. To have a page that you can go to for a quick reference is mm-hmm. brilliant. But I think, you know, the key thing is here that mm-hmm. we're all going in the same direction. We mm-hmm. all just want the same result, mm-hmm. and we should all be collectively as a community working mm-hmm. together for the same end result. And that's really hard to do when we're being constantly blocked. And yeah, we just need communication, just mm-hmm. a bit of communication, open up the lines, let us all do the same thing. You know, mm-hmm. we just want, you know, at the end of the day, that the allergy community be prepared, be safe, be vigilant.
Yeah.
Whilst getting on and living their lives to the best of their abilities.
Mm. That's fantastic. I'm so shocked that people have not, like, that they're blocking you. I find it absolutely shocking.
We were mortified, to be honest, because it's the last thing you would expect. And I think sometimes people would say, I know I could certainly sound guilty, be guilty of it. People think I'm being angry, or I've been accused of having an angry post. And I'm like, it's not angry. I'm frustrated. I'm upset. But why would I, you know, I'm not angry with you. I just want you to be able to listen to me. Or if my post sounds a bit challenging, then everyone should be challenged. I mean, anyone who writes a policy could be expected mm-hmm. to be challenged.
Yeah.
They might not have expected the challenge to be from their own people they were working for mm-hmm. or they thought they were working for. But that's life, isn't it? Mm. But I find it incredibly frustrating that we've continually asked for a meeting. Because mm-hmm. if we had a meeting, they would sit down and see we're three mums. I mean, I haven't even met Lindsay. Iris once 2 years ago. We talk every day, but I've never met her in person. Yeah. So every day, go along and have a meeting and meet her. Basically, we've done all this work on the internet, haven't we, Iris? And it's just been
absolutely
constant chat. I mean, we only met for half a day a few years ago, but I think it'd just be lovely to sit there. They could see who we are, where we're coming from, try and listen. You know, I mean, one allergist did say to us, "You've got some good points that they could change in the guidelines." If you were prepared to do this, that, whatever. And basically, without going into too much detail, he's one of the ones who's blocked us since, but basically mm-hmm. I think they realize that we have got some good points, especially with regards to the rural. If they could change that, even that would open up so much more freedom. You know, my daughter's got the right to get on a plane and travel. She wants to travel. She will be traveling in a couple of years. I'm not having her going with one pen to wherever she wants to travel because I wouldn't even let her on a plane with one pen. But, you know, I mean, the point is that we all should have the right. I see it very discriminatory. Maybe they didn't like the word discrimination, but basically I would say it is discriminatory because it's stopping my child from having the right to travel. If you take away that second pen, and that's huge. I mean, we all take it for granted, don't we? You know,
I think we kind of hear time and time again about, you know, we should not allow these allergies to define us, our lives, our children's lives, but the fact remains, it will. If you've only got one pen, you haven't got the tools to protect yourself. You haven't got your safety net. You are going to be limited in the choices and the decisions you make on a daily basis. Once you have your medication, then that's your plan, that's your care plan. Tick one, got your medication. You can then make a bit more freedom of choice in what you do, where you go, where you eat, do you eat out, it makes life so much more different. And you have to, there's no getting away from the fact that anxiety and allergies come hand in hand. Mm-hmm. You take those pens away, you reduce that medication, you are introducing anxiety at a high rate into families, and that is destroying families. And I've seen what it did to me and to my family. Thankfully, you know, we were in a position that we could afford to go privately for therapy. We could afford to do a lot of things and pay for hypnotherapy, and, you know, we've got a great support network around us. If I didn't have the funds to do that, if I didn't have the great support network around me, I don't know where my little unit would be right now today. And you cannot turn a blind eye on the anxiety side of things when you want to reduce down the medication. You can't do that because you're reducing one and you're highlighting the other one. It just doesn't make any sense to me. So from my side, psychologically, the anxiety, all of that impact, mental well-being is huge. And that's what drives me forward. I've seen what it did to my 5-year-old son. I've seen the impact for myself and on our family. And I can only imagine what it does to other families that didn't have the resources that I had to hand.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, we're going to have to start wrapping this up, actually, I'm afraid. I know we could keep talking for another hour.
Forever.
We can talk.
No,
we're good at doing that.
I think you've raised a really important aspect of living with allergies, and also to make people aware of the reasons we carry two adrenaline pens, the reasons that, you know, how to use them, the fact that people aren't alone. I mean, that's why I started this podcast. It's to show people that it's not the end of the world if you've got allergies, and to give people like yourselves, like the other guests that I have on, to talk about their experiences and how, you know, they have challenges, but they keep going forward.
Yeah. Well, it's key to see, to have somebody like you there. It's key for our children to have somebody like you to look up to.
Oh,
and
you.
See that actually, well, it's so true, though. It's key that they get to see, you know, your allergy is one small part of you. It doesn't hold you back. So actually having somebody like you is really inspirational.
Aww.
So, you know, keep doing what you do. I think it's fantastic.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Well, just before we wrap up, can you each give me your three top tips for other mums whose children have had allergic reactions and now they're dealing with their own anxieties?
I'll let you answer that first, Iris.
Ooh. Right, top tip, talk. Talk, don't hold it in, don't bottle it up. Talk to whoever you feel safe with, but talk. Go to your GP, your best friend. Get a couple of girls around, get the wine out, but talk, absolutely talk. That is key. I think don't let it stop you, stopping your child from doing things. I can carry the burden. I mean, you read people don't want to go out to the cinema or eat out in restaurants, things like that. We do that, and we do that a lot. And Freddie goes to parties and sleepovers. I carry the anxiety. It's not fair for me to put that on his shoulders. So try, if you can, if you feel you're passing it on a bit, try and step back, deal with your anxiety, let your child get on and live their way. And make sure you've got two pens. Would be my third bit of advice, really. Whatever they take to get those two pens.
Okay. Where would I start? I mean, find a forum. Find a forum, definitely.
Yeah.
Find a forum to share experiences, to talk to people, or pick up the phone to Allergy UK. Great advisors there and help. Obviously, I would say learn to advocate, get your child to advocate, I should say, for their allergies. Encourage them to speak up, to challenge things that they don't think is fair. Finally, for yourselves and your children, a good group, friends, support networks, very, very important. I mean, be patient with your family. Family don't always get it straight away. Family the hardest to get it at times, especially like the grandparents. Bless them. But we're there now, and it's just a matter of education, isn't it? Educating your friends and family, and you'll get there. And there's so many of us in the same boat. Unfortunately, it's on the increase. You know, please follow the campaign, follow the pages, we can help.
Yeah.
If we can't help, we'll send you to someone who can.
Absolutely. Yeah. Can I just add, I think it's about raising awareness and education, but not in a fearful way.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's really, really key. It's not fear-mongering. It's not kind of it's looking like at yourself, Nina, and and the campaign pictures. It's raising awareness, but in a positive way. Life goes on, you live it, you travel, you go to theaters, you do whatever. Raise awareness constantly on it. I mean, I've done a lot of things locally. I've been in the local newspaper a few times raising awareness, and we do things in school, but it's done in a fun, positive way. Never, you know, the last thing I'd want is to induce any fear, because then Freddie would never get invited anywhere, quite frankly. People would be terrified to have him. That's not going to do anybody any favors. So fun, educational awareness in a positive, positive way.
Perfect. And can you tell people where they can sign the petition, the Facebook and social media groups, like any way that they can get involved with the Always Carry Two campaign?
Amazing. Well, we have a Facebook page, which you're going to add the petition at the end, aren't you, the podcast. I don't know if that's too late to add the campaign page. I should have given you that. If you just go to Google, put in hashtag Always Carry Two, straight away you'll get links to the photo, to the petition. From there, you can find us on Instagram. We're actually called Campaign for Two AAI on Instagram and Twitter now. I couldn't change that on Facebook. So it's quite easy to find us there.
Okay.
So it's Campaign 4 2 AAI.
great. And I'll send us over there.
Yeah. And send us your pictures. We are constantly adding pictures of, you know, and the more teenagers, the more young adults we can get, you know, if they don't want to show their faces, just the pictures of them holding their pens against whatever restaurant, theatre, aircraft, wherever they're going. But just we need more pictures, more awareness. And the teenagers and young adults would be helping, you know, influence all the younger children.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Fantastic. And I will be putting all links on the show notes for everyone. So you'll be able to get those links if you're in the car listening to this or walking. So. Don't worry, you won't be missing out. Just make sure you check the eatallergysafe.com website. So thank you so much, Angela and Iris, for joining me.
Thank you, Nina. It's been absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, and thanks on behalf of Lindsay too, and she's very sorry she didn't make it.
Well, hopefully her child is feeling better now.
Okay, thank you. Thanks
lovely.
So much.
Thank you so much, Nina. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
So that was Angela and Iris. I hope you really enjoyed that episode. I loved talking to them and hearing about their experiences with allergies. And they're such really positive women, and they've started such a positive campaign. And it sounds, even though that people may be blocking them or not taking what they say as something positive, from all the feedback they've got, the number of people involved, I think it really is a positive, something really positive can come out of this. And it's all about keeping allergy sufferers safe. So it's coming from a good place. Lindsay is the other allergy mum involved in this campaign. And unfortunately, she couldn't join us because one of her children was really poorly. So Lindsay, I really hope your child is better. And hopefully we'll be talking to you at some point in the future. So as you will have heard, the Always Carry 2 campaign is available for you to sign and get involved with. So I had a quick look at their petition, and they have 1,614 signatures left to reach their 50,000 target of signatures. And I was thinking about it. Well, last month, and this is a little celebration, we had 1,775 downloads of podcast episodes, which is amazing. And according to my stats, that was 1,325 people. So, and then 1,326, including me, if every one of us went and signed the Always Carry 2 petition and got maybe a partner, a husband, a wife, a mum or a dad, someone else in your family to sign it too, we could help Angela, Iris and Lindsay reach their 50,000 target. What do you think? Do you think we could give them a hand? So yeah, for anyone who wants to sign the Always Carry 2 petition, go to the show notes page of this episode, which you can find at eatallergysafe.com/episode42. And there will be a link for the petition. Just click on that link and then go and sign up. It's on a change.org petition. So quick updates from me, as you are probably getting used to. I like doing my quick updates for you each week. First up, chocolate recipe book. I know I've been going on about this for ages, but it is, you know, it's getting edited. It's been looking more like a book, actually, which is quite exciting, and getting longer and longer with all the information I want to include for you. And I'm hoping to have a launch date soon. So make sure you keep listening to the end of the episode and I'll keep you updated. I'll also be announcing on the Eat Allergy Safe Facebook page, on the Eat Allergy Safe Instagram page. It'll go on Twitter too. So, and also, if you're on my mailing list at eatallergysafe.com, you will also get announcements on there. If anyone wants to see what I've been getting up to, sign up to the email list, because you will get the first, like, working with chocolate chapter, which is like a preview. I've edited it since that one you'll get, so there's a bit more in it in the actual book, but you'll get to see what I've done or where I've started. You'll also get a couple recipes with that little guide, as well as a couple bonus recipes to follow. And those recipes, they're like preview recipes for in the recipe book, so yeah, you'll be seeing those in the actual final copy, but if you sign up, you get a look first. Also, the Eat Allergy Safe Facebook page, I've made a little album to include some of the behind the scenes photos. So if you want to take a look, just go to the Facebook page. Now, Did you listen to last week's episode? That's episode 41 that I did with Peter Alderman and Dr. Thomas Bonner. And like, it's really exciting because I'm running the first ever giveaway on the podcast. Like, I'm really excited. And I have 10 books and 10 sets of allergy-free detergent that you could get your hands on. And it's really easy because all you need to do is listen to episode 41 and then write in the show notes in the comments section your answer. So it's really simple. And I have 10 to give away. The deadline is September the 30th. So that's just under 2 months. You have just under 2 months. I think it's about 6 weeks from now. So by the time, just after your kids have gone back to school and the summer stuff is wearing off, you could be winning this really great book called The Real Causes of Allergies and a set of allergy-free detergents. So make sure you go download episode 41 from the website. Go to eatallergysafe.com/episode41 or go to iTunes and listen to it from there. We've already had a few entrants, so make sure you get commenting on the show notes page as quickly as possible, because if there's only 10 people, then those 10 will get it. But if you keep answering or you post, then you've got a chance to get your hands on a copy of this really great book. I'm going to be doing a review soon, and the allergy-free detergents. So those are my updates for today. And we have another sponsor for the podcast, amazingly. Thank you again to everyone who's been listening, because without you, we would not be able to get sponsors. We would not, well, we wouldn't have you and we wouldn't have this podcast. So today I'd like to thank allergytravels.com for being today's sponsor. Allergy Travels is a brand new website for travelers with food allergies. And what's exciting is that it's launching tomorrow, Tuesday the 8th of August. And I was very lucky to be asked to review the website before launch. So I've had a sneak peek at it and I'm really excited. It's a great resource for you. It has ratings, reviews for different countries. It has a forum to ask questions. You might even see some of my ratings and reviews on there. And it's about helping you navigate and travel the world safely with food allergies. So make sure you check out allergytravels.com. It's launching tomorrow, Tuesday, the 8th of August. So that's it for today. Thank you so much for joining me. Welcome to all my new listeners today. And I will be talking to you next week. Remember, allergies aren't about missing out. They're about doing things differently.
You have been listening to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast by Nina Modak. If you want to help other people with allergies discover this podcast, then please rate it in iTunes. It only takes a few seconds. Your rating could make the crucial difference in letting a fellow allergy sufferer find out that they're not alone and help is available. Thank you.